But I believe they had warrants. The tape takes on with the conversation, or continues on with the conversation. Ed, you guys sound like something right out of hell. Do you know where hell is, Fred? Voice, yeah. Ed, where is hell, Fred? Voice, yuck. Ed, how old are you, Fred? Voice, 16. Ed, are you a ghost, Fred? Voice, no, yet, I'm a ghost. Ed, who? Voice, Batman, I'm Batman. Ed, Batman isn't a ghost. Voice, spirits lapse into an array of animal sounds, the most predominant being that of a barking dog. Ed, you want to be animals? Imitate some animals, imitate a pig. Voice, snorted like a pig. Ed, how about a dog? Voice, barking. Ed, how about a cat? Loud, screeching meow. Ed, how about a turkey? Voice, gobblings. Ed, how old are you, Fred? 78. I'm a liar. Tommy's a liar. Ed, I know. Voice, can I sing a song? Ed, sure, Fred. Go ahead and sing. La-dee-da-dee-da. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of holy water. Ha, ha, ha. Ed, are you a Christian, Fred? Voice, yep, a soldier, I'm a soldier. Ed, when did you die, Fred, as a soldier? Voice, I'm always dead. Ed, were you ever married, Fred? Did you ever have a wife? Voice, yeah. Ed, what was her name? Voice, I don't know. How old are you now? 30. I'm 30. That's the third different age he's given. You know what day it is? Yeah. The 7th. Right. Do you know what month it is? August. 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 August 7th. Where'd you get those names, Fred, Tommy, and Billy, and so on? The graves. Do you go over the old graveyard near here? Yeah. Why? To read the graves. Do you like the graveyard, Fred? Why do you like the graveyard? Death. What do you think of us Americans? I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. Do you know where America is, Fred? I don't know. Can I come? No, Fred, I got enough to do without you. Ed, Ed, Ed. What do you want, Fred? Smash the recorder. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Yeah. Ed, do you know what I'm going to do with these tapes, Fred? I'm going to play them to some scientists I know in America. They're going to be very interested in you, Fred. Voice, I'm going to smash it in the night. A quarrel then develops between two spirits as to who's going to smash the tape recorder. As the voices rise from the level of argument to one against one, yikes and howls, Ed sends Paul out to the car to get a bottle of holy water drawn from Walsingham Shrine, north of London. Paul returns to report the bottle of holy water is missing. Ed, where's the holy water, Fred? Am I boring you?
No.
Voice, I slung it. Ed, you slung it. If you don't bring that holy water back, we're going to perform an exorcism on you. Voice, ha, ha, ha. Ed, you want me to bring a priest in here? Yeah, all right, bring him in. I'll kick him in the backside. What would you say if the Blessed Mother told you to leave, Fred? Yeah, God. You know what this is, Fred? What do you see?
Yeah.
A cross. That's right. It said a cross. The cross means your day's numbered here. Boy, I'm going to chop somebody's head off. The next time I come back here, Fred, you better be gone, because the next time I come, I'm bringing a very powerful exorcist with me, someone you won't want to mess with. Voice. Ed. 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 Edward. Ed says, what is it, Fred? Voice. Let's play exorcist. Go get the holy water. Having played the recording, Lorraine suddenly jumps up from the couch and strides purposefully to the bedroom door. She then calls to Ed. Upon checking, the room reeks of alcohol, and on Lorraine's dresser, an ornamental crucifix set in a grotto is turned upside down. Oh, you don't want me to go on. I can tell by your attitude tonight, you think this is funny. My audience here doesn't appreciate these phenomenal stories. I'll take their names tonight, and when Craig finally gets this book, I'll see to it they don't get any copies. I'm going to ask the people out there again. You want me to continue with this demonology stuff? You still want it? Shall we just give up on this book?
No, sir.
I mean, there are a lot of unfinished things I haven't finished yet in this book. I've just scratched the surface. I was going to read a lot of it tonight, but these people in here tonight are too disrespectful. They're to blame. Teach on it. Jeremiah. I have a little book here. I gave it away once a long, long time ago. Dim, distant past. Don't come over unless I tell you with the camera. It's called Jacob's Pillar, a historical, Bible historical study. It's a strange story in Genesis 28. Let's read it. I might be persuaded to get generous. We got any copies of this book, Mike? No, sir. He said it almost rejoicingly. They have to mail it. Okay to laugh at that. Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. Now, you know what he had just done? Cheated his brother, conspired with his mother, and lied to his old blind dad to get the birthright. Now, any church knows that God would never talk to anybody again that act that way. You see, God looks on the heart. Jacob lied. Came time to... You know, this had a background. Esau was born first, and we've been talking about birthright. And when Esau came out, they had struggled in the womb, and Esau got out first. The Bible has strange ways of describing childbirth. No forceps or anything, just the will of God. Here comes old Esau. He had won the fist fight in his mother's womb. I mean, when there was so much at stake as to who got out first, it was not pleasant to be carrying those first ones. Jacob comes out right behind him. Can you see that little old baby fish grabbing Esau's heel? And the name Jacob means heel catcher. That's why they named him that way. Yet in the New Testament, God says, Esau I hated, Jacob I loved, before they ever got out. Now, by primogeniture's rule, Esau, the firstborn, was going to get all the rights that come via birth. And birthright should not be a complicated subject. It's the rights you obtain by being born. God had given great promises to Abram, great promises to Isaac. Now, the firstborn is going to inherit all those. Jacob wanted it. He wanted the promise of God. That's the part that God looked at. Jacob wanted God's word to be fulfilled in him. Esau treated it casual, disrespectful, went hunting, and old Jacob set him up. You know how hungry he'd be when he came in. It's amazing when you're out hunting or fishing how terrible food, you just get a whiff of it, tastes wonderful. So here comes old hungry Esau, and Jacob's got his soup on. Can I have some? If you'll sell me your birthright. Just get that picture. Starving man. You can have it. You give me your birthright. And Jacob sold it, or Esau sold it to him. But when it came time for the blessing, Esau had always been Isaac's favorite, and Isaac didn't know about this trade-off. And Rebekah, knowing that the time of the blessing had come, because he said to Esau, Isaac did, I'm going to give the blessing now. You go out and get some venison and fix me a stew like you do that's good. They put animal skins on Jacob, made him smelly like Esau and hairy like Esau. And old blind Isaac, feeling around on him, says, well, you know, it feels like Esau, but the voice is Jacob's. And he tricked his dad, lied. But he had this going for him. He wanted the birthright. He wanted God's promise in him. Now, I want you to understand, if legalism was the order of the day and righteousness was the criteria for relating to God, it was a heavier load in the Old Testament than the New. No question. But what the Old Testament was supposed to run by the standard of righteousness. Well, a man tell a lie like this, no way he could be blessed of God. He had robbed the blessing by a lie, and he got it. And when old Esau came in wailing and screaming, Isaac says, what I've done, I've done. I'll give you a blessing, but he's got the birthright blessing. Esau wants to kill him, and Jacob's fled. That's the context. Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. Page 33, chapter 28. Page 33, if you've got a Bible like mine. It's out of print, by the way, and we found out we could get 900 more today. And so I said, put a hold on them. He lighted upon a certain place. And tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows, and lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. How in the world? Doesn't it just blow your mind? Noah got drunk, and God still blessed through him. Jacob tells a lie and cheats, and God gives him this vision. God must not see things exactly the way the traditional church has been telling us. I mean, it's enough to make a sinner out of you to read the Bible and find the church has been so wrong traditionally. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I'm with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. And Jacob awakened out of his sleep and said, surely the Lord's in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had put for his pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. Now, I'm right in the margin of your Bible. He called the place Bethel, house of God. But the name of that city was called Luz at the first. He changed it now and calls the place Bethel. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. Right in the margin there, the stone is called God's house. He gave the name Bethel. Shall be God's house, by the way, is simply translating. I don't know why they translate Bethel in one verse and don't translate it in the other verse. Because Bethel is God's house. And in the 22nd verse, this stone which I've set for a pillar shall be Bethel, God's house. But the King James people loved, you know, since they'd said it once, they weren't about to repeat it. They had to show off their vocabulary. In the 19th verse, he names the place Bethel. In the 22nd verse, this stone which I've set for a pillar shall be Bethel. See the distinction? And all that thou shalt give me, of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tithe. Tenth. Again, the King James translates the word tithe. Because tithe is tenth. All that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tithe unto thee. Now, who said these King James people should decide when to translate and when not to? It's Bethel in both places, and it's tithe, not tenth. Because tithe and tenth are the same. But tithe is the liturgical tenth, that which is blessed of God. And by translating the word tithe, the tenth, they sort of weaken the reality that the tithe existed long before the law was given. Abram tithed to Melchizedek. Now Jacob swears to tithe, and he sets up the stone and calls it Bethel. Let's go to the 31st verse. Or 31st chapter, verse 13. God is talking to him in the 13th verse. 31st chapter, page 37, if you've got a Bible like mine. I am the God of Bethel, God speaking. He never ever had called himself before by that name. I am the God of Bethel. Hey, Jacob. Look back to the 11th verse. The angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, here am I. Gave him a special message in the 12th verse and says then in the 13th, I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, return unto the land of thy kindred. I want to ask you a question. If you had had an experience like that, and laid your head on a pillow, a rock, and when it's over, you had anointed the place and said, the place is the house of God, but you then anointed the rock itself and said, this is the house of God. And you left and came back to the place as God had promised, and you had God speak to you and say, I'm the God of Bethel. Wouldn't that rock take on a symbolic importance? Wouldn't that rock have a meaning that made it a little different than just any old rock? Now let's go to the blessings. In essence, would you have just left it there? It isn't according to reason. Particularly after God accepted the designation and said, hey, I'm the God of Bethel. The rock you anointed. Now let's go to Genesis 48. You say, what's it got to do with Jeremiah? You're going to see. Genesis 48 and 49. He adopts the sons of Joseph in the 48th chapter. 16th verse, he says, let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abram and Isaac. Well, let's take the 15th verse. He's down in Egypt now. He's about to die, and the news comes to Joseph, who's the boss man of Egypt. So he brings his two sons in, Ephraim and Manasseh. Manasseh is the older and Ephraim the younger. So he sets them down with Manasseh on his left, on Jacob's right, and Ephraim on his right, Jacob's left, so that the right hand of blessing will go on Manasseh the firstborn. And old Jacob, also blind, or almost, crosses his arms. And Joseph, the father of his two sons, tries to separate them and say, no, Manasseh should get the right hand. Jacob corrects him and says, he knows what he's doing. Manasseh will be a great nation, but Ephraim gets the blessing. He blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abram and Isaac, 15th verse, Genesis 48, did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, that goes back to the vow, where he said if God would feed him and clothe him, he would give him a tithe. Now he's testifying that God kept his bargain, and leaving unspoken the fact that as a condition of the bargain, he must have paid his tithe. The angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named upon them in the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac. You see, he didn't say that to his other sons. Ephraim and Manasseh are to bear the name Israel, because that's, he says, let my name be upon them. His name was Israel. Jacob had gotten his name changed to Israel when he wrestled all night with the angel. That's why the tribes headed by Ephraim, the 10-tribe kingdom to the north, come to be known as the house of Israel. It could just as easily have gone the other way. The southern kingdom. But Ephraim was the dominant tribe by the blessing of the 10-tribe kingdom to the north, to whom the birthright passed through the sons of Joseph. And they bear the name. Now we know why that hidden from history, it leaps off the Behistun rock that among the Persians they were called Saki, Sakasuni, sons of Isaac, dropping the vowel that opened it, bearing the name Isaac. Kingdom of Judah never carried that name. They're Jews, which is a contraction of a Judah man, or Judah, the kingdom of Judah, Judahite, or the contraction that ultimately made simple just Jew. It was the descendants of Joseph, Ephraim, that were given the blessing right to bear the name. Abraham, Israel, Isaac. And let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. He held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. Joseph said unto his father, "Not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put the right hand on Manasseh's head." Father refused and says, "I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people. He also shall be great, but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he. His seed shall become a multitude of nations," more literally, a commonwealth. And he blessed them that day, saying, "In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh." And he said Ephraim before Manasseh. Now the 49th chapter, the blessing goes to Joseph. 22nd verse, Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well whose branches run over the wall, a symbol of spreading out. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. You're going to find in the history of these descendants of Joseph, they'll become noted as archers. And I might tell you, Scythians simply is a cognate word for scuth, the word used in Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Booths, characterizing the people who lived in booths. It's a synonym for nomad, and it is the cognate for the name Scot. The Scots, literally, check your dictionary, means nomads. Now, have you ever wondered? Joseph was hated. Joseph was hated because of his many-colored coat. Haven't you ever wondered why the Scots? I mean, I've got the Scott family colors on tonight. Haven't you ever wondered why the Scots have become noted with those many-colored coats? Come on, take some pictures. It's one of the books I enjoy reading, The Clans. You know, we just see them as plaids. Every family has its own colors. They have dress colors. They have fighting colors. Nobody dares wear a clan's colors except by permission. Well, haven't you ever wondered? Look at those. There's the Stuarts. Look at their colors. Just look at some of these colors. Sinclair, you might see your name here as you listen. Shaw's. The Roses. The Robertsons. You know, check into your history.